accession number 20272, Reel 2.
Majisans, Reel 2.
My sister was a nurse in Ascot at that time. She eventually went to Leicester, Royal Infirmary Leicester. But my younger brother was at Elizabeth College, and he was evacuated with the school. I don't know where they went, somewhere in the north of England. And from there, he joined the Royal Air Force and became a squadron leader. He was in Sunderland for flying boats. I think he was in 228 Squadron, I'm not sure. And that was what he did during the war. And so that my father died in this prison in Paris. The official notification of death says that he committed suicide. I have always, and says my mother, well, I mean, she's dead, have never agreed with it. My father was in the Ceylon Survey Service, and he retired in about 1930-ish, on the grounds of ill health. I don't know what the ill health was. I was a boy then, about 10 or 11, living at home. And my mother, both of us thought that what happened was that when we were in this prison in Paris, in single cells, I think the women who were involved, there were about 14 of us involved in this, I think the women were in cells of two or three, but we, I know that Hubert Nicole and I were both in single cells. It was a solitary confinement, and I think my father was in a single, I think all the males who were in the party were in single cells. And I think that what happened was, according to my mother, that my father was very angry that the Germans were not sticking to their word, that they had said that if people gave themselves up by a certain time, on a certain date, they would be treated as prisoners of war, whereas we were being treated as spies, and he thought it was wrong that my mother in particular was suffering in that prison. And I think that what happened was he made such a row in his cell that the Germans came and hit him, and he died. And I feel to this day that it was a cover-up for them murdering my father. That he didn't commit suicide. I can't prove it. I've written, that file there is full of letters to people about it, and I got absolutely nowhere. So all I've got left is that certificate of service there, which even then I don't know how my father got that certificate.
That's from Montgomery.
Montgomery, yeah. Nobody knows.
And why were there as many as 14?
I'll tell you. There were people who'd helped us. We were given away to a certain extent. There was my father, my mother, myself. There was Hubert's father, mother, and himself. There were both our girlfriends. That was eight. There were parents, more parents there, and there were other people that we recruited who helped us, keeping a watch on either the harbour or the airfield. And we used to, in the 3 days we were there, just did little jobs for us. We were friends. I've got photographs of them all going off to Paris by plane.
But could you have carried on incognito?
No. I mean, where would we stay? We actually, at one period, while we were living at home, we were at home for some weeks, six, 7 weeks. And we couldn't move by day. I mean, if we went out, we had to go out after the curfew was put on. Really, because the curfew got so early, depending upon the time of the year, and in those days it was about, I think it was about 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock was the curfew. Well, we didn't want to be seen by anybody because we weren't there officially. I've lost my track. I was onto something.
I was asking, could you have continued?
No. Or it might have done another. It depended upon our parents, really, as to whether we can continue or not. At one time, I know what I was going to say. There was a rumour that the Germans were going to get around and try and. They thought there were spies on the island, they were going to try and capture them. So we didn't want to put our parents. We then went to this General Williams, or at least our parents, our fathers went to this General Williams and asked what he thought. And he said, well, the boys must give themselves up, but another idea, we decided we couldn't give ourselves up, and so we thought what we would do. We would pretend that we had landed just a couple of nights previously, and we stayed, we decided to go and stay in the cricket pavilion on the playing field of Elizabeth College. And what we were going to do was for 3 days, we were going to eat nothing but apples. We weren't going to shave. We were going to, and we hoped that we would be looking ill enough and then give ourselves up. Oh, by this time, we'd got uniforms. Fortunately, Nicole's uncle was the harbour master in Guernsey, and there had been an army unit in Alderney before the war. And of course, there'd been the Royal Guernsey Militia. But in a shed at the harbour of St. Peterport were a lot of battle dresses. And he managed to get us both a battle dress that fitted, but no badges of rank or anything. I used my my blues badges to put the pips, one pip each, second half turn, and I gave Hubert a couple. And when we gave ourselves up, we were wearing this uniform. And we thought if we stayed in this place for 3 days, we would be in such a state that we could give ourselves up without getting our parents involved in it. So we had to get the groundsman's permission to do this. He had been in the Manchester Regiment in the First World War, was a private, a tough character, and he, like a flash, said, no problem at all, come up. And so we went up by car, forgotten whose car, and got into this pavilion where we stayed for 3 days. The strain of, what's the word I want? Not exactly the strain, but the very issuing of this document that people who were who were there would be treated as prisoners of war. The whole had become yesterday's news, and so we decided we could go home again. Which we did. And we're getting a bit muddled here. I know we went up to that plane there. Difficult to remember exactly why we went back home. Can't remember. I've got it all written down somewhere.
And who is this General Williams?
This General Williams was who had been in the Hampshire Regiment. Probably in the Boer War days, but he became a major general, and was, I believe he was at Gallipoli, I'm not sure. Anyway, he was another old Elizabethan.
Where was he living?
He lived in St. Peterport. He was a very nice chap, Williams. And my father went to him for advice as to what we should do, and he said the boys must give themselves up and take advantage of this order. And that's why we went. And our parents reported us to the police that we were at home at 5 to 6. They reported, well, my father did, went to the police station and reported my presence. Well, I think he went about 4:30. And Hubert Nicol's father did the same. And the police came and picked us up. And Hubert Nicol was down with me at the time. And we were having a bottle of champagne. And the police came and took us, put us in the Guernsey prison, reported us, our presence, to the Germans. And the following day we were taken to the officer's mess, of the battalion. Before the war, there was always a battalion in Guernsey. the officers' mess at in the barracks, and we were court-martialed. And
how did the Germans treat you?
Well, quite well, as officers. I mean, we had we were only there for a short time, but we had sheets. No exercise, that was the problem. I didn't, I think Hubert Nicol did. And but we had a swine of an interrogator. You know, funny chap.
How did he conduct the interrogation?
Well, like you do. He asked questions.
About any third degree?
No. It was quite a lot of shouting. But that's a German tray I discovered. And then we were shipped off. And there, you see, we were then... We were... Hubert Nicol was... in the book, this book about him, he records that this German major said, "You are a bloody spy, you will be shot." And I don't think they ever told me that. They might have. I can't remember. I think at that time... A, I can't remember now. B, I didn't really know what was going on, sure.
But did the truth about you unravel in the course of the interrogation?
Yeah, it did. You see, I mean, they got hold of our parents and friends, and the whole thing started to click. And they knew that we hadn't landed. Our story was he'd only been there for 3 days. It was absolute rubbish. We'd been there for 7 weeks or thereabouts. We landed on the night of the 3rd of September, 1940. Was it? Yeah, I think so. Do you mind if I just...
Well, no, if it's in the book.
Yeah. Anyway. I think it was the 3rd of September, 1940, we landed. That's right, it was the night 3-4. We landed early in the morning of the 4th. And we were due to be there 3 nights, that's what I said, and we'd take off.
And then you were taken from Guernsey to France?
No, we went to Jersey first. We went by boat, the SS Holland. We went to Jersey. And there, and I remember, it was a little tugboat. I don't know what the hell the Holland did. I think it brought rations or something. We were allowed on deck on this kind of tug thing. And at one time, we both looked out to sea, and we hoped to see a periscope of a British submarine arrive and save us, but of course it didn't happen. And we ended up in the prison in Jersey, where they were swines. They were terrible, the Germans. They are a lot of crapos, Jersey people. That's what they're known as, crapos, toads. So the Guernseymen, I'm speaking. And we stayed overnight in the Jersey prison, but we made the warders' lives an absolute misery. We never let them alone for a moment. We either wanted a cigarette or a match or go to the loo. Or we just kept at them all night. I mean, it's silly when you think of it. The following day, we went to Granville by boat.
Where's that?
In France.
But now, why did you have such objection to the way in which you were treated by Jerseymen? What were they actually doing?
Well, they just wouldn't do anything to help us. We thought they should have helped us. I mean, after all, we were not Germans. I know we were Guernsey, but I suppose as far as they were concerned, they never. There's always been a lot of rivalry between the islands, you know. Anyway, we went to Granville. We went to prison, Granville. And from Granville, we went to Saint-Lô, where we split. We were taken by car all the way. And we went to... And I say Saint-Lô, the prisoner at Saint-Lô. Oh, before we left Guernsey, my father gave me a £10, which was a lot of money in those days, for anything I might like to use it, for bribery or anything. And I smoked in those days. And I had cigarettes, but I had no matches. So I asked one of the warders in the prison if he could let me have some matches. And he said, yes, provided I pay. This is some frog. He said, yes, provided I pay for them. So I said, all I've got is £10. He said, that'll do. I can see him now, this chap. He said, that'll do. So I got some matches, and I had my cigarettes, and I managed to smoke them.
You mean he kept the whole £10?
Yes, he kept a lot. Yes, he was a trustee prisoner, which is not to be trusted. And from there, we went to this bloody prison in Sheshmadi prison. What? And funny.
What were conditions like there?
Well, I had a single cell. I measured the cell with my thumb. It was about 11 foot long, it was about 5 foot wide, and it had a little wooden table, about that height, about like that. And didn't have a chair, I had a bed, and I had a window overlooking the road, and I had a window overlooking the door, yeah. And then the interesting thing was that I had a stool. And what we used to do, and when the guards went in the evening, we got in the wall was what they call the O's and So's. O for water and So for shit, I suppose. And they used to put the bucket through where you could, a latrine bucket, right? And you then pushed it out in the morning, and then it was taken empty and then came in again, and the water came in through the same hole. Unless a trustee prisoner was sometimes, or most times, used to bring the water. He brought the food around, that's right. And I had a chap one day. This happened. We got 250 grams of bread a day and a bit of sausage. And that was it. Except on Christmas Eve, my mother, who was on another floor, sent me a Christmas present of a tin of sardines, which was part of her ration for Christmas, which I thought was rather nice. My trustee, the chap who did the French prisoner, because there were a lot of us in there, all on various charges, he had been in some time, and one day he noticed that I had carved a little case that I'd taken with me with clothes in from home. And I had carved the regimental cap badge on the case. And he said to me one day, when he had two German guards with him, or one guard looking at him, make sure he wasn't passing stuff, I suppose, to us prisoners. He said to me, I was in the regiment, and the door shut. And over the few days, it transpired that according to him, he had been in the Hampshires, in France, during the First World War, and he also had been after the war, he'd settled down in France. And I asked him why he was in. He said he was in for sabotage or something. I can't remember. I think he was a pure liar. His name was Saye, which, of course, in actual fact, his name wasn't Saye at all. It was Sayers, S-A-Y-E-R-S, which he pronounced as Saye. And I'm sure he was a shift. I think he was a narc, looking back. Anyway, I didn't mind seeing him in the morning because it gave me something to talk to. But what we used to do every evening, we could all open these over the door. We could open there was an air inlet there, and you could poke your head out. And of course, the moment you got in there, you were something new, and so everybody, and especially when in my corridor, when they found out that I was a British officer. And at the end of the corridor was a fellow called Monsieur Mon Capitaine, who was a French officer down there. God knows what he was in for. Or any of us. On our doors, we had two crosses. And on my floor, I either had blue, was it red? Anyway, Hubert Nicol, who was on another floor, had a different colour to me. But one cross stood for sabotage and the other stood for espionage. And so when the jailers came around, they knew immediately what sort of character they had behind the door. The captain was in. He disappeared. But my next-door neighbour disappeared. He told me one day, we used to get up and have a chat when the guards had gone from the corridor in the evening. And we were all locked in. I mean, we were locked in all the time. But anyway, once everything had been done, the O's and So's and the food, they departed about 5 or 6, leaving us to our own devices. And the chap next to me one day said, I'm going to be shot tomorrow morning. So I said to him, have you got any soap? Because I'd run out of soap. And he said, yes. I said, well, could you give it to me? He said, yes, but how are we going to do it? He said, I won't have any need of it. I can see this Frenchman now. I'm not joking, this is absolutely true. And I had a bit of string. I don't know why I had a bit of string, but I did. I think my father put a bit of string in that case and probably thought the string might be useful. And I forgot what I put on the end of it. Oh, I know, I put a bit, my soup spoon. Well, it was the only spoon I had. I tied it on the end of the string and I swished it. Swung it across to this other chap's cell, but he eventually caught it and he tied the soap on it and pushed it back to me, and that was the last I ever heard of that man. Sad. But we were changing all the time though. We were there for weeks.
So could you speak French, being a
I knew enough French, yeah, sure. Yeah. I also learned German at school. In fact, I took a high school certificate in French and German.
Had you spoken patois?
No, my mother spoke for patois. I didn't. Nor did my brother, nor did my sister. I think the patois went out depending upon which area of the island you lived. If you live out St. Saviour's, Tortable, out there, places that a normal islander wouldn't talk about, even though it was only 5 miles away, patois was spoken. But in those days, the late 30s, no.
So, were you maltreated in this prison?
No. Nothing. We were awaiting sentence. And we were told, as I say, on December the 21st, that we'd been... And as a result of that, after Christmas, we were allowed to... share a cell, Hubert Nicol and I, on the same floor, on my floor. When I say my floor, well, God, we got up some games there. We had we had central heating in this prison. Well, I mean, we had the pipes for central heating. It wasn't all that hot. And we noticed that the trustees lived in a cell down there at the end and at that end. Who were the chaps who cleaned out all the O's and so's and brushed the floor and out of the passage and so on, kept the place clean. There was also a chapel, funny enough, on this floor, which Hubert Nicol and I kept clean afterwards. These trustees, there was a noise, a banging went on these pipes, and I suddenly twigged that lot were talking to that lot in some sort of code. I don't know what it was. So what I used to do, I used to sit on my stool and I used to interrupt the what's the name? I used to give a couple of shorts and a couple of longs or something while they were talking. And you could tell, I could tell that they were going mad. They were wondering why they couldn't understand one the other. I mean, I didn't know, but I could tell they didn't know what was happening. I tell you, that prison was a hell of a place. And from there, we went to Stalag. You know the difference between Stalag and Oflag?
Yes.
Stalag is Stamlager, right? Other ranks. We went to Celle-Saint-Cloud, Stalag 112, at Celle-Saint-Cloud, outside Paris, where we met up with a few others. We met up with a padre, a flying officer, a lieutenant, and a private, and ourselves. And we were in a little hut. But the rest of the camp was taken over entirely by black Senegalese French troops. And I wrote to my mother from that prison. My mother, by that time, they'd all flown back to Guernsey, except my father, who died. And I wrote to my mother, and I said, it was quite blistering cold. It was January 1941. And... I said to her that I was in this camp with all these black Senegalese and that the lavatories were a crossed wooden thing like that with a pit. And you had the cross like that, another cross with a bar, you see, and you sat on the bar into the pit. And I said, it was the first time in my life that I'd realized that black men had black bottoms. Anyway, we stayed there a short time and then we were sent to Oflag 9AZ. 9AH? 9AH, Army. Yeah, that's right. a place called, what the hell was it? Oh, I can't remember now.
But in Germany.
In Germany, Spangenberg. In Spangenberg. Off leg 98. Yeah, the Luftwaffe one, the Air Force one, was at the top of the hill, and we were at the bottom, the army. And after we'd been there a few months, we were then sent to at a Stalag 20A in Poland, in Torun, Poland, where we went and we watched from the camp the traffic going into the rail traffic going into Poland, because we were there just before the Germans invaded Russia. Anyway, when they invaded Russia, we were before that, we were removed from Stalag 20A in Torun to back to Offlag 9AH in Spangenberg. And after we'd been in Spangenberg for a few months, we then went to Offlag 6B. Yeah, 6B.
Did you have any particular friend whilst you were a POW in Germany?
Yeah, my friend Hubert Nicol. Everywhere we went together. Other than that, I was with the same group of officers virtually throughout, except the bitter end when people who were known to be escapers, but not of a quality, who went to this other place,
Colditz.
A certain group of us were removed from a camp, off like 7B, yeah, 7B, and we were sent to off like 9AZ. Rotenburg under Fulda, where we stayed till virtually the end of the war, and then we marched east for about a fortnight, and we were picked up by the Americans at midday, 12:05, on Friday, April the 13th, 1945, and we were all allowed to send a message home, but the Americans allowed us to do this. We all queued up, and I sent a message to my sister saying I was freed. And the following day, we were flown to Liège and Brussels, and then from Brussels, or Liège, I can't remember, we were flown home to Aylesbury, where we were deloused, medically inspected, given a bit of money on payment, and released.
Were you debriefed about Guernsey?
Yeah, this is what, from then, when we were released, the two of us, at Aylesbury, when we were at Aylesbury, we got a message that we had to report to, I forgot where it was, I never remember where it was, in London. We had to go to a place in London for debriefing on what had happened to us, in Guernsey, not so much what happened to us afterwards. And then we were set free. And I had nowhere to go, because I couldn't go to Guernsey, because at that time there were only military boats going to Guernsey. There were no civilian boats going to Guernsey. So I had to stay in England. So fortunately, a friend of mine in Bristol put me up for 6 weeks. And then at the end of April, May, I went back to Guernsey. My mother was there very well. My sister and brother, of course, weren't. My brother was, as I say, in Pembroke, in the Air Force. And my sister was, at that time, in Leicester. My girlfriend had married. And then I started from, I think a hell of a long time to tell you this, I then started a military career for the next, oh God knows how many years.